Reveal is brought to you by Progressive, where customers who save by switching their home and car save nearly $800 on average. Quote at progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who save with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letton. For high school football players, the last few weeks of summer break are a time for getting ready to kick off the new season. All across the country, they're starting football practice. So we're bringing back a show we did earlier this year about concussions and one state's effort to protect kids from head injuries. Our story begins in 2001, under the lights at a Friday night football game in Oregon. An ambulance is racing from a small town to get to a hospital 150 miles away. Inside is a high school football player named Max Conrad. He's unconscious after taking a hit. Following behind the ambulance is his dad, Ralph. The whole way, he remembers pleading with God.
I told God I will never watch another boxing match. I will never watch another high school football game. If there's any way, take me, not Max. I mean, I was bargaining. Just bargaining.
Max played quarterback for the Waldport Fighting Irish. And that night, he'd been tackled hard in the first half. The hit made him confused and punch drunk. After the play, he wandered into the wrong huddle. A teammate pulled him into the right one. Max hadn't slept the night before because a headache from a concussion in the last game kept him up. Then, at halftime, as he was walking off the field, Max collapsed.
Max died. Oh, God, I shouldn't say that. The Max we knew left us at 8 p.m. October 19, 2001. There's a different Max now.
Max woke up after months in a coma, but his brain never fully recovered. Doctors determined that Max suffered what's called second impact syndrome, when a person's brain hasn't recovered from one concussion and they're hit again. The second hit puts enormous pressure on the brain. When Max's dad, Ralph, learned what happened to his son, he was determined to do something. The first was to raise awareness by convincing the media to do stories about Max. Then he teamed up with brain injury advocates to work on legislation. In 2009, Oregon, along with Washington, became the first states in the country to pass concussion laws. Oregon's was called Max's Law, and it was designed to protect high school athletes.
As soon as he or she appears to have been concussed, he's required to come off the field, and you don't go back in, period. You have to be checked out by a doctor.
It's now been 10 years since Max's Law was passed, and every state has a youth concussion law on the books. Most say players suspected of having a concussion can't play or practice until they give their school clearance from a medical professional. We wanted to know if these laws are really preventing injuries like Max's, and to see if all the records schools have on concussions can teach us anything new about protecting kids. Lee Vandervoo led a year-long investigation for our partners Investigate West and Oregon's Pamplin Media Group.
We recognize that potentially we're sitting on a goldmine of data that nobody was really looking at.
So what did you do exactly?
Well, we asked for 2 years of these records from all the public high schools in Oregon. That's 235 schools. And we looked at which sports had a lot of concussions at which schools, whether they had happened in big districts or small ones. We also just wanted to see who was following the law.
Don't states enforce it?
Actually, no. There's no enforcement mechanism. So at minimum, we thought this could be a really good audit. Do people do this if nobody checks?
Lee's colleague in the project is Sergio Olmos. He wanted to follow a football player who played the game after Max's Law was passed.
That's right, Al. I wanted to see if there were any consequences of the law that weren't easy to see in the data. So I looked for someone like Max, someone who played football in high school, got hit in the head more than once, and that's when I found Jonathan Bolin. Jonathan grew up in a working-class neighborhood called Park Rose. It's on the outer edges of Portland, near the airport. not a part of town that tourists spend a lot of time in. There's a little more poverty here than the rest of the county, and a lot more diversity. Most kids at Jonathan's high school are students of color. Jonathan's family home is a small, square 1950s house with a tall evergreen tree out front and a big backyard. I'm in the living room, looking at family photos with his parents.
Jimmy is our oldest, Jeremiah, Jonathan, and Jewel.
That's Jonathan's father, Jim Boland. He likes to joke around.
Yeah, you want to hear something funny too? Jimmy was born in July, Jeremiah was born in June, and Jonathan was born in January. Girl comes along, messes it all up. March.
That's not funny.
That is funny. I planned it that way.
Renee, Jonathan's mother, thinks Jim jokes around too much. They're different in other ways too. Jim is tall and white. Renee is short and African-American. He drives trucks for a living. She's an educational assistant. In fifth grade, Jonathan turns to his mother when he wants to do something Dad won't allow.
I found a team and took him there. It was a rec team, flag football. He practiced with them that evening, and we got in the car on our way home, and I said, do you like it? He goes, yeah, I do, but Dad's not going to let me play. I go, well, I'll just take you without Dad knowing.
Jim didn't want his kids getting hurt playing football, so Jonathan and his mother kept it their little secret.
Until finally he had a game, and I encouraged Dad to come watch him. And when he came out to watch him, he saw how good he was.
Jonathan was good at football from an early age, but his neighborhood high school, Park Rose, was not very good. In Jonathan's lifetime, they made the playoffs once, the year before he started high school. So they were on the rise, and Jonathan came along at just the right time. Jonathan wore a medium jersey and a thin mustache. He was short for football. He was still growing, but he was talented enough to play varsity his freshman year. The next year, he took over as quarterback.
Sophomore year was when I started to take playing quarterback seriously, let's say that. Going to camps, getting my own personal quarterback coach, hitting weights heavy and quarterback drills every day.
When Jonathan was in games as quarterback sophomore year, Park Rose's average score per game doubled compared to the games he had to sit out. And the team kept getting better.
Jonathan Boland has led really a resurgence of the Bronco football team. And as Dan Christofferson reports, he doesn't plan to stop until they reach the playoffs.
I love playing quarterback.
You see that in the way Jonathan Boland plays the game with passion and style.
Renee remembers one amazing play Jonathan pulled off.
The first play, they hiked the ball to John. He went straight down the middle and scored a touchdown. Didn't even look at anybody. He just got the ball and took off running.
97 yards.
That's scary. But he could do it. He did it.
Let me ask you about running the ball as a quarterback. Did you get hit a lot?
Mm-hmm. Every play, every single time if I'm not scoring or if I'm not running out of bounds, yeah, I was getting hit. Yeah.
Do you remember the first concussion?
It was back sophomore year. Yeah.
Concussion number one. Jonathan is tackled near the sideline. To him, concussions feel like this.
Just the slowness, the fog. People say you see stars. I ain't never seen stars. But, the stomach ache, you usually throw up after a concussion. My stomach hurt.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention list those as classic concussion symptoms. So what exactly happens to the brain? Here's how a CDC expert explains it for parents and players on their website.
A concussion is a change in how the brain functions. So it's not a structural injury, it's a functional injury. When the body or the head is struck, the brain will slosh around inside the head and it changes how the brain works.
Concussions can affect people's memory and make it hard to think clearly. The CDC says they can trigger mood, behavior, or personality changes.
Concussions in youth sports is important because you're talking about a potential threat to the development of that youngster's brain.
When Jonathan gets his first concussion, sophomore year, it's 3 years into Max's Law. He was pulled out of the game, as the law requires. He went to a county medical clinic at Park Rose High School 10 days after getting hit. Notes show he was given a cognitive test, and he had symptoms of a concussion. But the test itself is not in the files, and there's no record of a follow-up test. 3.5 weeks later, Jonathan turns in a doctor's note clearing him to play. It looks like the law was generally followed here, but the paper trail is incomplete. And in our review across the state, my colleague Lee found that a lot of schools keep sloppy records.
When we got a hold of the request, the condition of the records was, in some cases, just really rough, like handwritten notes and really inconsistent record keeping. And of course, good records, it's not required, but it's certainly best practice. And at the end, it was really hard to be confident in how well the laws were being followed. Honestly, that's just sort of a shame. I mean, here we have this potentially great opportunity to learn more about concussions and student athletes in our state, and we're not really learning anything from it.
And we looked at Jonathan's school, Park Rose, specifically.
These days, Park Rose is among the best organized we found, but that's under a new principal. From Jonathan's time, the school says it simply has no records other than what was at that county clinic. They don't know what happened in the school's athletic department records on concussions for all the years Jonathan was there.
So after that first concussion, Jonathan's mom, Renee, started to see changes in her son. He had trouble focusing on his homework. At school, he would go to the nurse's office when he needed a break.
He was allowed to lay down, rest as much as he needed to because of the concussion.
That was an informal arrangement. Unlike some states, Oregon doesn't require schools to have an academic plan to help athletes who've had a concussion return to class gradually. It's junior year and Jonathan is back on the field. His team has a realistic shot at making the state playoffs. It's Friday night in late October. The play is a quarterback draw. Jonathan runs up the middle. Two linebackers make the tackle on him and come down on his head. Renee is in the stands and sees him go down.
He didn't get up. When I got there, his helmet was off. He just kind of laying there. Then the paramedics were talking to him. He tried to open up his eyes and he couldn't. He said the light was too much. And the last thing he kept saying was, "I ran, Coach Mo. You told me to run. I ran." You know, he was apologizing. Now that he's injured, he's apologizing.
Concussion number two. This time, Jonathan went straight to the hospital. He stayed overnight. Jonathan watched his team from the sideline the rest of his junior year. Hospital records show a doctor wouldn't let him play or even work out for 4 months. When that time was up, Jonathan went straight back into the gym, training with the former Park Rose assistant coach, T.P. Brown, who had become a mentor and friend. Coach Brown says that it was slow going.
I mean, with the headaches, you really can't do too much, you know, with the running, the pounding. So it's, you run a little bit and you walk. You might lift a little bit and then we're doing mobility work. So it wasn't as rigorous as, you know, like I said, our normal training regimen was.
Jonathan pushed through headaches to rebuild his strength. He wanted to be 100% for his senior year. And not just for the sake of playing football. He wanted to be the first kid in his family to graduate from college. And he hoped that football would pay his way. For Jonathan, that meant doing anything to get a scholarship, including downplaying his concussions.
Because I know as a college coach, being around them, they don't want an athlete that has a lot of injuries, you know? Especially concussions, because you don't know how many you can get until you retire.
When Jonathan returned as quarterback senior year, the Oregonian, the local newspaper, called him as good as new. Park Rose coach Maurice France, known as Coach Mo, told the paper Jonathan was back to his old self. Jonathan's mom saw something else going on.
Jonathan was taking 4 to 5 ibuprofen or Advil before every game. And when I found that out, then I was telling Coach Mo about it. I go, "I don't think that's healthy. I don't think he should be doing that." He goes, "Well, if it take away the pain, then it makes him play better." "Yeah, but 4 to 5 ibuprofen, that's not good."
Coach Mo told us he thinks he would have sent Jonathan to the school athletic trainer if Renee raised that concern. He doesn't remember the specific conversation. It's halfway through the season. Jonathan takes another hit. His helmet is knocked off. He sits out a bit, but then he returns to the field.
My boy Marshawn was just like, "Yeah, bro, you're tripping and your head's messed up, bro."
His friend Marshawn talks to the coach, and Jonathan gets pulled out of the game. Park Rose's athletic trainer goes up into the stands and tells Jonathan's father, Jim, that his son may have a concussion. Concussion number three. But things fall apart from there. Jim forgets to tell Renee, and Jonathan doesn't tell anybody. In fact, Jonathan tells the school trainer he went to the doctor and was okay. The school double checks with Renee. She's called into a meeting, and that's when she realizes Jonathan has been lying. She's furious.
I go, there's only one thing to do. You're not playing in the playoffs. You're done. Right when I said that, the athletic director and the nurse who works in the health center said, wait a minute, wait a minute. Let us run the test on him to see how he's going to be in 2 or 3 weeks or whenever the playoffs was starting. I said, no, because if he's not going to tell me the truth and if I'm not going to find out, he's done. So she goes, let us run the test, Renee. I say, so why am I here?
Jonathan's third concussion brings up a weak link in Max's law. It relies on students to tell the truth, parents and school staff to follow up, and everybody to put health above football.
I was frustrated because, this is my opinion, they wanted a quarterback. They wanted a football team. Jonathan wanted a reputation. All of it played together.
The former assistant coach at Park Rose, T.P. Brown, thinks that's just the way it was back then.
I mean, the concussion protocols were just coming into play, and there was not as much stigma around concussions as it is today. And so a lot of that stuff wasn't being taken as seriously as it should have.
But at this point, Max's law had been in effect 5 full years, and coaches were supposed to get concussion management training every year. As for Jonathan, he didn't want to think about concussions. He wanted to think about his performance on the field, because he knew that colleges were watching.
I want this hash, this hash, this hash. Black, black, black. Let's go, let's go.
That's Portland State University football coach Bruce Barnum, roaming the sideline at a game. He's a big man, built like an offensive lineman. He thought Jonathan might be worth a scholarship. So he goes to watch the Park Rose homecoming game Jonathan's senior year.
That night, it was raining, just a gully washer. He was a quarterback. He was a star of the night. It was obvious. Everybody, every time he did something, the crowd cheered. And, you know, I wanted to see everything, how he interacted. And not a one soul could I find to say anything bad about Jonathan Bolin. I saw how he treated his mom, you know, that night. You know, he had the umbrella for her. He's in his uniform, sweat, and he gave her a flower. He was everybody's All-American that night.
Jonathan's concussions didn't worry the Portland State coach.
Because when we bring them in, 2 hours are spent with our trainer. So I don't judge any of that. They do all that. I just get a report. Yes, he's fine.
A few weeks after homecoming, Barnum and an assistant coach knock on the door of the Bolin house. They walk in, and right away, Jonathan hugs the coach.
He was like, you're the first recruit to ever hug me. And I'm like, that's just me, you know. I just want to give you a hug, man. Like, I already know it's about to happen, so you...
How did you feel in that moment?
Just like this, giddy. Like a little kid on Christmas, you know what I mean? Because this, I know it's about to happen. A dream's about to come true, you know?
So, Sergio, it looks like the risk Jonathan takes by continuing to play actually pays off. He's going to Portland State University. And I want to bring back in your colleague, Lee Vandervoo, for the big picture. So, Lee, you led the investigation into Oregon's concussion law. Jonathan got 3 concussions playing football. How typical is this?
We don't really know. The law doesn't say anything about tracking repeat concussions, and school records don't show that. A kid can get 2 concussions at one school and move to another with a clean slate. But I can tell you, while I was surprised at the number of concussions in soccer, for example, all the head-to-heads, football remains by far the big one. Our data showed something like 600 concussions or suspected concussions over 2 years at school, so that gave us enough good data to use.
600 knocked heads. Is that a lot?
Well, if you break it out, it's roughly 50 concussions per 1,000 athletes. So anecdotally, as the person who enters those in a spreadsheet one by one, I can tell you that sometimes it really looks like a lot. 5 per game, 4 per game. It looks like a car crash more than a football game. But I mean, overall, Oregon numbers compare pretty closely to the only state that does any kind of comprehensive reporting on student concussion, and that's Michigan. Most states are like Oregon, and they don't do data collection.
So you're the first ones to put all this data together. When you looked at it, were there some schools that reported more concussions than others?
Yes. We found that if a school has an athletic trainer, then the rate of concussions reported at that school is about twice as high as at a school without a trainer. Remember there was one at Jonathan's school? He went up to the stands to talk to Jonathan's dad after that third concussion. These are people who have some medical training, and their job is to look out for school athletes. Now, there could be other factors at play there, like maybe the size of the school, but experts in other parts of the country also say that they've noticed athletic trainers make a big difference in noticing and reporting more concussions.
And Sergio, do you think Max's law made a difference? I mean, did it prevent Jonathan from getting hurt like Max?
Getting hurt like Max? Yes. In a couple of ways. One of them was education. Max's law requires high school coaches to get concussion training every year. And as we talked about, schools today have to pull kids with suspected concussions out of games or practice until they get medically cleared. So you could argue that Max's law protected Jonathan from that kind of injury, second impact, the kind that derailed Max's life. But we found that Max's law has a blind side that still leaves athletes like Jonathan vulnerable.
And that's where we'll pick up the story in a moment. Sergio and Lee, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
When we come back, Jonathan's concussions catch up with him in a way that nobody sees coming.
This is not the end of the world, okay? You can recover from this. You will recover from this.
You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Support for Reveal comes from Odoo. What is Odoo? Well, Odoo is an all-in-one management software with apps for every business need. Odoo has apps for CRM, accounting, sales, HR, inventory, manufacturing, and everything in between. And they're all in one easy-to-use software. And the best part about Odoo? All Odoo apps are integrated, helping you get things done faster and more efficiently. So when you think about business, think Odoo. To learn more, visit odoo.com/reveal. That's odoo.com/reveal.
This podcast is supported by Americans United for Separation of Church and State. Americans United defends your freedom to live as yourself and believe as you choose, so long as you don't harm others. Core freedoms like abortion rights, marriage equality, public education, and even democracy itself rest upon the wall of separation between church and state. A network of anti-democratic groups are attacking these freedoms, seeking to force us all to live by their narrow beliefs. Americans United is fighting back. Freedom without favor and equality without exception. Learn more about AU's work at au.org/MJ.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Today, we're re-airing a show about concussions and the laws that are supposed to protect student athletes. In Oregon, the law seemed to work for Jonathan Boland. He's a young African-American quarterback who had three concussions in high school, was given time to recover from each, and then went on to win a football scholarship to Portland State University. When he got there, Jonathan didn't play right away. He redshirted his freshman year, the official way to sit out a season so he'd be bigger, stronger, and better trained when he started as a sophomore. Jonathan's first year was fun. He got to know a lot of his teammates, had a girlfriend, did a lot of socializing. But there were also times he'd retreat from parties to a dim, quiet room to rest or study plays. Reporter Sergio Almos of our partners Investigate West and Pamplin Media Group picks up Jonathan's story in the August before his sophomore year.
It's 2 weeks until the first game of the season, and Jonathan is excited. He practices knowing he's finally going to play in a college game. He plays receiver, running drills against the first-string defense. Jonathan goes up to catch a pass and falls.
You know, I did like a fade, and as I was going back, I like caught it, and I fell back and just hit my head, and I'm cussing, and like, damn, like, not again, you know what I mean?
Concussion number 4. Jonathan doesn't say anything, but his head is hurting. As soon as practice is over, he goes home, to the house he shares with teammates just off campus. Jonathan's room is in the basement.
And then at night, there's like this little beam in my, it was in my basement. And my lights were out, and I'm walking down the stairs, and I smacked my head on that. And it kind of triggered what I had did earlier in that morning.
What would you feel?
Definite head rush, blurriness. You know, my stomach started hurting. Couldn't go to sleep. Couldn't go to sleep at all.
The next day, he tells the team trainers what happened, and they put him on the university's concussion protocol. Rest, then light exercise, returning to play when he's ready. Jonathan expects to bounce back, but almost a month later, records show that he can only run 10 yards before the headaches start. It takes Jonathan 39 days to pass a standard cognitive test. The team sends Jonathan to a doctor who clears him to go back to full contact, but Jonathan still doesn't feel right. He goes to see his own family physician, then his coach.
And I went up to Coach Barnum and I just said, I just want to retire. I'm scared. First time I ever said I was scared to a coach. The first time I was ever scared in football, you know.
Bruce Barnum is the coach who recruited Jonathan, the guy Jonathan hugged when he got the scholarship. This meeting is emotional as well.
I remember tears in my office when he couldn't play anymore, you know, because of the concussion situation. He needs to walk away from the game.
Coach Barnum decided to keep Jonathan on scholarship and made him an assistant, but he was off the team. Barnum knew it was going to be tough for Jonathan to leave the game. He'd seen it before.
It's a disconnect. It's hard to explain. You've done it for so long, and now all of a sudden, bam, it's taken from you?
911.
I got robbed.
A few days after Jonathan decided to retire from football, the clerk at a mom-and-pop convenience store calls 911.
What's the address?
It's near Jonathan's house, the place where he regularly buys snacks and drinks.
Okay, and what did this person do?
He just walked in and took the pistol, and he said, open the door and give me the money, and I'll do your black.
He had a gun?
Yeah, he took...
At 4 the next morning, another call from a different convenience store, this time near Park Rose.
I was just robbed by gunpoint.
Okay. White, black, Hispanic, Asian?
Black.
Okay. Alone as far as you can tell?
Yeah, but two people ran out after them.
A third night, it happens again.
He had a gun, he cocked it, I don't even know.
How much money did he get away with?
I mean, not any more than about $45 maybe.
$45?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Police circulate photos from surveillance tapes. One shows a muscular young black man in a Portland State tank top. A police officer who sees it happens to follow college football. So 3 weeks after the robberies, officers show up to Portland State football practice and take Jonathan to headquarters for questioning. We were able to get the police video.
So you probably wonder why you're here.
Jonathan looks nervous. He's sitting in a small interrogation room across from Detective Darren Posey. There's a table with a box of tissues between them.
Why do you think you're here? Any ideas? You sure?
Well, yeah, maybe, okay. Definitely, yeah.
What?
Did do a little convenience store, whatever, with one of my friends.
Okay.
That probably.
Yeah, no, you were absolutely correct. That's what it is.
Jonathan doesn't have a lawyer with him for the questioning. He never asked for one, even after the detective tells him that he has a right to have one there. Jonathan answers everything, describing how he acted as the lookout for his friend who had the gun. Then Detective Posey asked Jonathan about football.
I saw some of the news reports and stuff about, you know, what had happened with, you know, the concussions and not being able to play football anymore. And
he tells Jonathan, you know, he wants to understand his frame of mind.
I kind of was wondering if maybe there was a bit of a disappointment kind of issue going on with that. Okay. Obviously, you feel bad about it. I can tell that.
Jonathan doesn't tell Detective Posey much about walking away from football, besides that he was pretty down about it. He says he was drinking and doing the drug Xanax during the holdups, but he says that he doesn't want to use that as an excuse for the crimes. The police ask Jonathan if they can search his locker, and he agrees. As an officer heads out to do that, Jonathan asked Detective Posey what's ahead.
Am I staying in for a while, a couple of days or so? So what's going to happen is you're going to get booked.
Jonathan puts his head in his hands and starts to cry.
This is not the end of the world, okay? You can recover from this. You will recover from this. And we can, you can mitigate this, okay? Have you ever been arrested before for anything? I don't think you have, as far as I can tell.
Detective Posey's right. Jonathan has never been in trouble with the law before. His arrest makes headlines. The Oregonian publishes his mugshot. Coach Barnum reads the article.
I was in shock. Three people arrested, robbing a store. I'm like, Boland? For what I knew, totally out of character.
Jonathan's mother, Renee, reacts the same way.
Totally different person. That wasn't our child. You know, Jonathan loves people, loves having fun, but that police report says Xanax, Molly's, don't even know what that stuff is. Heavy drinking, marijuana, all that kind of stuff. It's like, wow, this dude went out deep in.
It's like what people are seeing in some NFL players. Erratic behavior and substance abuse, difficulty thinking, and even suicide. These are symptoms linked to a brain disease known as CTE, believed to be caused by multiple hits to the head. Players who sued the NFL in 2011 said the league suppressed information about CTE and other brain diseases linked to playing football.
Hard-hitting numbers today in a new study about football and head trauma. 99% of the brains of former NFL players studied were damaged. Out of 100.
For high school athletes, you might think that concussion laws in Oregon and the rest of the country would protect kids from the effects of multiple concussions, but they don't. The laws were written to protect kids from getting a second concussion before they've even recovered from the first. They're not designed to raise red flags about symptoms that build over time.
Not sure we can legislate that.
Here's David Krakke, a lawyer and brain injury expert who helped write Max's Law in Oregon.
Some people have terrible effects after two concussions. Some people have terrible effects after five concussions. And to be clear, the medical literature demonstrates that somewhere around 88% of people who suffer one concussion will recover fully from that concussion.
So it seems the law prevents another Max, but not another Jonathan Boland.
As far as, preventing the effects of multiple concussions over time, yes, I think you're right.
News of Jonathan's arrest spreads. Friends call to offer the family support. A local sports writer gives Renee the number for a criminal defense attorney.
And I called him, and the guy said, before I can even hear or start talking to you, $60,000 I need up front. I almost but fainted. That was crazy.
She talks to a few more lawyers, but they're all too expensive. So Jonathan is left with a public defender. Renee immediately brings up concussions.
The first day I took him down there, I say, I hope they're going to look at that Jonathan had just had a concussion with Portland State. Don't dismiss the fact that he's already had three.
The public defender orders a neuropsychological exam. The doctor who evaluates Jonathan writes that concussions had affected his ability to think rationally and that he was depressed from losing football and he was vulnerable to substance use and negative peer influence. The doctor wrote that Jonathan's symptoms were likely made worse by multiple head injuries. Researchers are starting to look at the possible links between concussions and crime.
There's pretty consistent evidence indicating that brain injury is a significant risk factor for delinquent behavior.
Joseph Schwartz is a criminologist at the University of Nebraska, Omaha. He's looked at changes in self-control and behavior in young people 6 months after they got a head injury.
So we're seeing that brain injury resulting in temporarily at least lower levels of self-control, which in turn is resulting in increased levels of delinquency.
His study tracked the impact of one brain injury at a time. I tell him about Jonathan's four concussions.
Those injuries could definitely accumulate over that period of time, and we can see that they're much greater than the sum of their parts.
An association between concussions and crime certainly has skeptics, in part because it's difficult to measure these symptoms. Experts tell us that courts rarely consider any brain injury as a full defense, something that would let criminals off the hook. But head injuries have been used to argue for lower sentences. Just a few months before Jonathan's case, another Portland State football player assaulted two police officers and brought up his concussions in court. Jonathan was trying to do the same.
That was my main argument, my concussions. If I did not stop playing football, I wouldn't be here right now because I would be at a football game, I'd be at football practice, I'd be doing something else other than robbing some convenience stores, you know what I mean?
Mr. Bolin, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, you're here for arraignment on your indictment.
A week after his arrest, Jonathan appears for his indictment hearing. He's wearing a blue jumpsuit and joins by video conference from the county jail.
Go ahead. There's a lawyer on your lawyer's office present here in the courtroom.
Jonathan is charged with first-degree armed robbery. In Oregon, that means mandatory time. For three robberies, a minimum of 22 and a half years. He and his lawyer worry about how a jury trial might play out, so they negotiate with prosecutors for a plea deal. Renee sat in on the talks.
And that's the first thing they said was, we're not bringing in the head concussion.
That's what the district attorney told you. No, we're not bringing it in.
We're not even making that an issue here.
Michael Reese, your defense, what did he say to that?
Oh, he just, a lot of times when they said stuff like that, he just kind of looked at him like, whoa, like he was surprised. You know, he gave that look like, whoa, he just said that? And that was it.
The prosecutor's office told us that they did take the concussions into account. In the end, Jonathan pled guilty to two charges. Prosecutors asked the judge for the lowest possible sentence.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Michael Reeves. This is Mr. Bolin. We're ready to proceed with sentencing, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
At sentencing, Judge Michael Greenlink asked Jonathan how the concussions affect him.
Foggy vision. I can't see clearly in my left eye. Sometimes I get headaches every day. But, you know, like I said, I'm alive.
Well, Mr. Boland, I feel pretty strongly that given everything I know about you and also, you know, the fact that sort of what brought you into the doing crime probably had a lot to do with medical issues that you were dealing with. You know, I feel like you're going to figure this out and take things in a really positive direction and get a lot out of life.
I appreciate that 100%.
And with that, he sentenced Jonathan to 7.5 years in prison with no chance at early parole. That's the mandatory minimum for first-degree robbery in Oregon.
It's just not going to be in here. This should be, that letter should, oh my gosh, I'm frustrated now.
Back at home in Park Rose, Jonathan's mom, Renee, sorts through paperwork from his case. He's been in prison 10 months at this point. Renee can't help but wonder what might have been different if they could have paid a private attorney. She still hopes to somehow find a way to reduce his sentence despite the mandatory minimum.
My goal, again, is to prove to the courts that Jonathan's concussion is the foundation.
Last spring, she asked his old high school, Park Rose, for video of Jonathan's games and any other records they have. She got this email back.
They said, Renee, we are here to support John 100%, but in order for us to release any information, we need a letter stating that Park Rose is harmless of anything that happened to Jonathan.
In other words, she has to agree not to sue them. Renee was offended, but she agreed. We showed that email to a couple of lawyers who called the request outrageous and probably a breach of law. The superintendent who asked Renee for that promise has left the district and refused to speak with us. Renee sees her son regularly, visiting him at Oregon State Penitentiary, but she still struggles to understand how this all happened. She knew there were risks to playing football, but she didn't imagine this. Sometimes she wonders if she and her husband could have done something differently along the way.
I think in some ways, not 100%, in some ways we fail Jonathan to say, what else do you love to do? You are more than a football player. I think we were all so on the pedestal and excited about Jonathan because of his talent, his skill, to where we didn't think about it, and it just kind of went over our head.
Visitors are not to have contact with the inmates except when this is included in the purpose of the visit.
I visited Jonathan at Oregon State Penitentiary last year.
You gotta step up and tell her your name.
Sergio Olmos.
From a guard station, I'm taken into a conference room upstairs from the cell blocks.
Okay. This is the guy? Jonathan?
Yes.
All right. That's fine.
Jonathan seems a little nervous, but excited to talk. He's gained over 30 pounds since playing football, lifting weights in prison. And he says he spends a lot of time in Bible study as well. I ask him about what plans he has when he gets out. He says he's thinking about coaching football, teaching the lessons that he's learned.
I'm going to definitely preach about concussions. I'm going to definitely preach about getting hurt. I'm definitely preaching about speaking up if anything's going on with you. I kind of want to start new, you know what I mean? Like right now, I'm glad I'm doing this. Like this is, I wish everybody in the world could do, you know, go to jail. I really do. Because when you know, when you have everything stripped from you, like you can't even see your family, you know, I guess you're not going to take a lot of things for granted.
Thanks to Sergio Olmos for bringing us Jonathan's story. After the original broadcast, Jonathan's family filed a lawsuit against Park Rose for failing to protect him under Oregon's concussion law. Thanks also to Lee Vandervoo and our partners at Investigate West and Pamplin Media Group. Their concussions project is called Rattled. You can find it at revealnews.org, along with a map comparing concussion laws around the country. With risk from concussions so high, more people are asking, is high school football even worth it? When we come back, a visit to a community that says yes.
Father, I thank you for the greatest game ever played, football.
This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. We've been talking today about kids and concussions and whether football is worth the risk. The number of high school students suiting up for football has dropped almost every year for the past decade, even as more students play sports overall. But late last year, I traveled to a place where football is much more than a game.
Is Youngstown a Steeler town or a Brownstown?
You get ready to start a fight. Because I'm still a fan and he's a Brown fan. You get ready to start a fight.
I ain't trying to start no fight. I was just trying to understand. That's all.
Youngstown, Ohio is about halfway between Pittsburgh, home of the Steelers, and Cleveland, home of the Browns. Youngstown has its own team, too, the East High School Golden Bears.
All right, now it's time for the football awards.
It's a freezing Thursday night in December, and about 100 people are gathered in a church banquet hall for the end-of-season awards ceremony.
And as the mayor of this city, I'd be honest with you, I never thought I'd say this. I love the East High Golden Bears.
When he was a kid, the mayor went to another high school that was a rival of the Golden Bears.
Right now, can we have the freshman kids come up, freshman players?
But his school closed years ago, along with nearby steel mills and a lot of other businesses in Youngstown.
Come up, please.
As the kids are called to the front, they walk past round tables with blue tablecloths and gold napkins. Balloon and flower centerpieces are done up in team colors, too. Tonight is a big night for Youngstown because the football team made the state playoffs for the first time since 1997. But it's bigger than football. Rick Shepas is the chief of athletics for the school district.
We expect to revive the city through East High School, through the Golden Bears. And as we continue the success here, we want to do the same thing across town and bring back the same kind of pride and tradition there.
So that's a lot of hope to pin on high school football. And whether or not the Golden Bears end up giving their hometown the spark it's been waiting for, there is something joyful about watching fit, happy young men proud of themselves and their team. Still, I wanted to know how concussions fit into this picture. I sat down at a table with a bunch of players.
So you guys are all on the football team, right?
Yes, sir.
You guys had an amazing year, huh?
Yes, sir.
Yeah?
I'm like, what?
Fellas, have any of you guys, like, taken a heavy hit? Like,
got I done gave a lot, though.
You done gave? What position you play?
DN.
See, like, any offensive players here?
Running back.
So you take a lot of hits, man.
That's running back Tim Davis. His mom, Bernay Davis, is at the next table.
So how does that feel when you see him going through and getting hit?
Heart attack. Like, my heart starts beating real fast. Like, oh, my God, is he going to get hurt? I've been to a game where some little boy ended up unconscious on a Saturday game. So it's always scary.
But not scary enough to pull her own son out of the game.
It's what he loves. I can't take away what he loves.
So your mom was telling me you got a concussion when you was 13, mm-hmm. but you decided to keep playing.
Yeah.
Tell me about that. Why?
Because, like, it's like my whole life for real. Like, I really liked the football. It was just like a passion. I wanted to keep playing and keep doing it. And I just can't stop. Like, because sports my whole life, and it's all I want to do for real.
For Tim's dad, Dwayne McCullough, concussions brought out his son's determination.
He kept it, dedicated, you know, and I love that about him, you know, not give up. Most kids give up, you know, he just wanted to keep it going.
Dwayne played when he was a kid and tells me football kept him out of trouble.
It definitely kept me around, away from all these guys that's in the streets, you know, and, you know, my mom was always on me, and I just wanted to be a part of the team. We was winning team.
So we're not from this area. Is there a lot of trouble to be had for young black men and young sound?
Yes, it's... You don't hear about the killings?
That's football mom Viola Sheeler. There was a triple homicide shortly before we got to town. The victims were close with some of the high school athletes.
I mean, the only way out in this life is either you get an education, you play some type of sports, and pray to God that somebody take you up under their wing, and then you get a scholarship and be able to get rich. I mean, what else? You got another choice. Either you dead or you in prison for the rest of your life.
As for the risk of concussions...
I just feel like, let them get hit. That's what's, you either you're going to be rough or you're going to be soft out there. Let them play. Uh-huh. Play ball.
Tonight's featured speaker is football pro Mike Flores.
I'm so ecstatic about this football team, this community.
He's from here. He played for East High School in the 1980s, then went on to play defensive end in the NFL. His speech goes down memory lane, back to his high school glory days. We grab him after and ask him about injuries.
And I don't want to say this because you might print this, but I actually spent 30 days in a brain injury facility because of concussion. So I wouldn't change a thing because football brought things out of me that I didn't know I had. It's a warrior's game. It's you know what you're getting when you get into it.
The next morning, I go to visit Professor Jessica Wallace. She runs the master's program for athletic trainers at Youngstown State University. She was at the banquet, too.
I love to be around these kids because sport made them feel good. Football made them feel good about themselves.
Jessica did her training in Detroit. An incident there helped put concussions in perspective for her. She was working with a high school team, and after one game, some players got beat up. They'd been waiting for the city bus to go home.
Concussion in sport is like nothing compared to, you know, the kid was in the hospital from getting beat up waiting to go home.
Recent research connects multiple head injuries to long-term brain disease like dementia. But Jessica argues that the health benefits of staying active outweigh the risk of football concussions.
There's a lot of obesity, there's a lot of heart disease, there's a lot of diabetes, and it's due to inactivity. And if we take activities away that kids like to do, that they feel proud doing, it's going to lead to a lot of bigger health-related problems. More problems, honestly, than the risk of getting a concussion.
I was listening to a professor, and he was basically saying that if your child has taken like two or three big hits, you should not let them play in these sports anymore. What do you say to that?
I would have to disagree just because knowing what we know about concussion, like the big hit, you know, some of the biomechanics, it is different per person. Just like, you know, somebody could break a bone, they can still play sport because the body has enough time to heal. Same thing with the brain.
That's not always the case. It depends on a lot of things, like your health, how hard you were hit. Was it a severe or mild concussion? The treatment you got. All of those things play a factor. Jessica tells me that in high school, it's important to have an athletic trainer who can pull kids from play when they get hit and make sure they have enough time to heal. That lines up with what we heard earlier in the show. Even in this heartland of football, some people want to replace tackle with flag football, at least for little kids. The town's flag football league went to nationals last year and brought back a championship trophy. I asked Jessica Wallace, the professor at Youngstown University, what she says to people who think tackle football should end.
People who don't quite understand the culture stuff, they're just thinking that you are sacrificing your children to this.
Yeah, I understand that perspective, but I guess sometimes you just have to take a step back because our science has come pretty far with concussions. So, I mean, our definition, our care, our treatment, our follow-ups. And so I think that parents and other people should know that besides, you know, the big hits that they're seeing on the game, there's a lot of really good things going on socially and health-wise that they should also start to consider rather than just like, oh, you're sacrificing your kids to violence. Well, you're sacrificing them to a lot of other really good things, too.
I'm going to ask if all the players, the cheerleaders, and the band will stand.
Back at the awards banquet, Gary Frost focuses on good things. He was a Golden Bear back in the day and is a pastor now.
Father, I thank you for the greatest game ever played, football. It's the game that has the strange ball. You never know how it's going to bounce, but you have to adjust to the bounce of the ball.
Life and football in Youngstown, Ohio. Thanks for listening to today's show. If you want to see how your state concussion laws compare with other states, check out our map at revealednews.org. If you're wondering what you should ask your school about how it handles concussions, text the word football to 903-201-2123. Once again, text football to 903-201-2123. We'll send you a list of questions to ask your school and invite you to share what you learned with us. You can text STOP at any time and standard data rates apply. Since we first broadcast this episode, we've had more than 125 parents, students, and journalists use our questions to learn about their local school district's concussion policy. Our lead producer for this week's show is Emily Harris. Taki Telenidis edited the show. Thanks to John Schrag from the Pamplin Media Group. Thanks also to WETA's Brainline for audio assistance. Jacob Fenton, Sanduja Ragarajan, Casey Miner, and Michael Corey provided research and data analysis. Our production manager is Mwende Inahosa. Our sound design team is the dynamic duo, Jay Breezy, Mr. Jim Briggs, and Fernando, my man, Yo Aruda. Our CEO is Krista Scharfenberg. Matt Thompson is our editor-in-chief. Our executive producer is Kevin Sullivan. Our theme music is by Camarado, Lightning. Support for Reveal is provided by the Reeve and David Logan Foundation, the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Jonathan Logan Family Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Heising Simons Foundation, and the Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation. Reveal is a co-production of the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX. I'm Al Letson, and remember, there is always more to the story.